another episode of the Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy, and in each episode of this podcast, I get to talk to an author about what inspired them to start writing, how they got their books published, and what advice they would give other aspiring authors. My guest today is Eileen Forrestal, a retired anaesthetist who worked as a doctor for 32 years, took over a publishing company, began publishing a series of award-winning diaries and journals, and has now written her memoir, The Courage to Shine. As you'll hear during our interview, as a child, Eileen had a stammer that made her afraid to speak for years, but she now works as a speaker, mentor, and coach, as well as writing and publishing. I hope you enjoy listening to the podcast as much as I enjoyed recording it. Hello, Eileen. It's really lovely to meet you today.
Hello, Alison. It's lovely to meet you.
Ah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. So, tell me about your books.
Books? Oh, you mentioned books plural. Okay. Well, So I actually have a small publishing company, and I publish inspirational diaries and journals. That's what I do for my job. Yeah. I used to be a doctor. I used to be an anesthesiologist. But now I'm in the world of books. But then I think I also wrote my own book last year, which was a big breakthrough for me. And that was kind of a memoir, like an autobiography. And I thought, oh, my God, who am I to write an autobiography or a memoir? And then, well, who am I not to do it?
Exactly.
Why not?
Exactly. So
that was it. So my book was called The Courage to Shine. And really, it was about what the courage it took to actually write a book and write a memoir.
So that is a really interesting transition from putting people to sleep to publishing journals and diaries.
I know.
What else did you get from anesthesiologist to teacher?
See, it's all in the book.
Okay, we'll just go and read the book then, end of it.
absolutely. No, look at, I tell you, it was all kind of a little bit by accident. And in fact, I'll just go, so the book is called The Courage to Shine. And the subtitle is called Find Your Voice and Discover the Healing Power of Your Words. Little bit of a long subtitle, but I was actually checking it. The subtitle I had initially was, it was like The Courage to Say Yes, because it was like, you know, for a lot of my life, I was kind of a refusal, and I was a refusal to speak. It's hard to believe that now, Alison, isn't it?
Oh, gosh, okay. Well, in childhood?
And through a lot of adulthood, I actually had a stammer when I was a child, and I just decided I can't talk, so I'm not going to, and don't ask me.
Okay.
So that's kind of how I sort of found myself in a medical career, you know, being very kind of quiet. I could talk to one person at a time, no problem. But then I was in anesthesia and my patients were all asleep.
No need to talk to them at all.
No need to talk at all, you know. So anyway, look at it. I kind of, you know, I suppose that was fine. It was fine actually to a point. And then you end up in conversations sometimes and people ask you questions and you think, I wonder, what would life be like? What would life be like if I risked it?
Wow. Okay.
So anyway, that was kind of it. So maybe about, you know, 15 or so years ago, not that long, I did actually decide, okay, maybe there's more fun talking. Than not. So now I say I could talk for Ireland. And so that was kind of it. So anyway, and I was working as an anaesthetist and I happened to be doing a fundraising. I was doing some fundraising. I used to do a lot of other, I did everything but talk. So I was doing a cycle in Vietnam or whatever, and I was raising some funds. And I used to buy a little diary called The Irish Survivor's Diary. Okay. And I was doing for fundraising, and just as part of my fundraising, anyway, when I went to the person who wrote the diaries, she said she wasn't doing them anymore, and I said, "Oh, well, that's a shame because I really like this diary. I've been buying it for 4 years." Oh. And then she asked me, "Did I want to be? Did I want like a partnership in the company?" And I went, "Okay." So I was like, "Well, yeah," even though I had not a clue, like not a baldy notion how that was actually going to work. But rather than have it like, you know, disappear, I thought, sure, I'll say yes and see what happens. And I've learned since, actually, that's one of Richard Branson's mantras, is just say yes first and then figure out how to do it later.
Ah, okay. It's a good mantra to live by, I think, yeah.
It kind of, it's, but it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun, you know, and I know, you don't know what's going to happen. And everybody's like saying, oh, you have your boundaries and say no and say no to this and say no to that. I don't find that when people say no, there's a very kind of a happy expression on their face. But when you say yes, it's like, oh, that's interesting. Like, yes, the party. Yes, I'll do that. Or yes, that could be fun. Then that's kind of, that's a little bit more interesting. You know, like yes is way more interesting than no is very like, no, it's final. You know,
Dale Carnegie
used to say something like, you know, it's like really, really hard to come back from a no. You know, if somebody gives you a no, it's really hard to go back and hope that they'll change their mind to a yes.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess with a yes, you've always got the option to backtrack and say no if it actually turns out to be.
Absolutely. You could just change your mind and say, well, actually, I'm saying yes to something else.
Yeah.
And you know how I said yes to you? Well, actually, you know, unfortunately, I now have to say yes to something else. So, but it's still a kind of a yes world. So that was actually the subtitle of my book was going to be, it was almost like the power of yes, or it's the whole world around yes.
Yeah.
And anyway, it's not that now. So it's really about find your voice. Because, you know, you can say yes. It's like if it's your voice is to say yes. And yes could be healing for some people. You know, people ask for, you know, I don't know, forgiveness or something, and somebody says yes. Like, oh, that's very healing. You know,
so
I think that's kind of anyway, there's a lot in the book, as you could see. I had to kind of cram a lot in, and when I do the diaries, I cram a lot into them too.
Okay, yeah. So you went into partnership.
Went into partnership back in 2006, and we changed the name. It was Celtic Tiger, so we changed the name from the Irish Survivor's Diary to the Irish Get Up and Go Diary.
Like that. The Irish Survivor sounds a bit kind of beaten down and all.
It was a struggle.
Yes, it's another day, let's see what
exactly
it is.
Yeah, and it was more in line kind of with my persona, you know, at the time. Whereas I did understand the kind of the other side of trying to survive something, trying to go through life with a stammer and trying to pretend or hopefully nobody notices. Gosh, is really hard. You end up saying very little just in case.
I guess so
that was it. So we've kind of up and going ever since, and you know, we've a lot of diaries now. We do you know, with busy women and entrepreneurs and leadership and travel or anything. I'll do anything.
Okay. But,
and that's kind of, I suppose, in a way, that's kind of how I met Jack Canfield. And then Jack Canfield did the foreword to my book because I asked asked him, would he do the foreword to my book? And he said yes. And I thought, oh, he could have said no. You know, I wasn't whatever, but he said yes.
I had a similar experience, actually. I happened to meet, I don't know if you know the British comedian impressionist Rory Bremner.
Yes.
Who has a connection with ADHD. And I'd written a book about raising a child with ADHD, and I was doing a second edition. And yeah, for various reasons I won't go into, I ended up at his house meeting him and his wife and having coffee and talking about ADHD. And while I was there, I said, I thought I might as well, I've got nothing to lose. So I said, I'm doing a second edition of my book. I don't suppose you fancy writing the foreword. And he said, yes, I'd love to. And yeah, exactly. If you don't ask, you don't get.
Exactly, yeah.
No, then I'd be no worse off. But
yeah.
Ended up with someone famous doing my forward as well, which was really cool.
Exactly. You know, yes is a very powerful word, you know, what you say yes to.
Yeah.
And so, another lovely quote that I have, and it's like, it's, you know, it's, again, I put it in the diaries, probably. I put as many quotes as I possibly can into the diaries, you know, things that are meaningful to me. And, you know, the one I like is like, after the final no comes the yes, and on the yes, the world depends.
I like that.
You know, because almost like, you know, no surrender and no, we're not going to do this, and no, we're not going to get no. And then at some point, say, okay. And then you can move, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Many years ago, I had a little local magazine, and I used to have to ring people up for advertising, which I hated doing. But I decided to myself, I'm just going to get a yes for something. It might not be a yes for advertising, but it will be a yes for me going to see them, or a yes for me emailing them some information, or a yes for me calling them again in a month's time or whatever. But whatever I go with, I want to leave with a yes for something. And I just worked down in these tiny, tiny little blocks until I got the yes for something. And then I felt that's a successful phone call. It might be this little thing they'd agreed to.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter. It was
And that's what builds confidence as well, and builds kind of, you know, because if you can do it once, you can do it again.
Yeah.
You know, people get very knocked back by no. It's like, oh gosh, you know, it means something about me. They don't like me. They don't want me. And it's like, no, they've just said no.
Yeah.
Do whatever. You know, it's like, not today, you know. But if you can get the yes to something, it's really, you know, it's very affirmative. Again, it's all affirmations. It's all in the language, you know, but I'm a great fan of the word yes.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yes, me too. So what took you, so you're publishing the journals or the diaries. What then came along to persuade you that it was worth writing your book and telling your story?
I suppose they kind of maybe both happened at the same time when I decided to leave medicine. So again, I was doing the books, you know, and I was working. So and doing the books. Yeah. And I was really enjoying working and I was enjoying doing the books. You know, it was fine. So it was like half and half. And, you know, I suppose as work was kind of, you know, like doing the books was a great balance to doing work, because work, you know, as an atheist, you know, it's quite stressful. So the books were like fabulous, because I'm always reading all of this really, really positive stuff. And then I'm applying all that. And I'm living in a very positive world in with words and my head. And then I'm actually working. So anyway, out of the blue, I got a phone call, again, another phone call, out of the blue, to go to an entrepreneur resort in Bali for a month. And I thought, well, of course not. Why would I do that? Like, I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm an anaesthetist. Do I want to go to Bali for a month for? Are you joking me? I haven't got holidays or anything like that. And my first answer was no, you know?
Yeah.
And the girl just said, she said, I was just curious. You know, I've been following your things on Facebook. And, you know, I was wondering whether you wanted, like, you know, global reach or global impact with your diaries. And I thought, global impact? Would that be amazing? Of course. Of course I want global impact. And I said, yes, okay, sure. I'll go to Bali for a month. No problem. It was like, you know. So then, of course, I had to go to work and I had to say, look, I need some time off. And actually, you know, I need some time off. I need a month. And so I got unpaid leave.
Yeah.
And I could get unpaid leave because the theatres were being refurbished. So we actually had less work actually being done. So they're probably relieved.
That was good timing. That was serendipitous, wasn't it?
Exactly. So I went off and I was in Bali for a month. And when I was there, I was teaching a girl how to swim. This is all in Google. But I was teaching a girl how to swim. Her name was Jewel. And Jewel was kind of afraid of the water, you know. So over the course of the month anyway, we kind of distinguished there was the courage and the fear and all that kind of stuff, right? And if you got over your fear of swimming, you could swim. So by the end of the month anyway, she was swimming, right? And we said, oh, this is really great. Look, it's all about that. It's just courage, you know, just like what's, you know, you're probably, you know, felt you drowning or something when you were five or, you know, something like that.
Some sort of traumatic.
It stays, some sort of traumatic event. So that was that. And then she sort of said, you know, so what are you afraid of? And I'm sort of thinking, nothing. And I couldn't really think of anything, you know, spiders, flying, jump, you know, anything. I couldn't really think of anything.
Yeah.
And she said, you have to be afraid of something. I said, no, not. I had overcome my fear of speaking at this point. So that was, as far as I was concerned, that was the only one, right? And then she said, there got to be something. And then I kind of thought, and I was like, I don't have any children, right? So, and then I said, gosh, maybe I'm afraid of dying without ever having been known. Oh. Just came out of my head, just came out of my mouth, right?
Yeah.
And she said, oh, that's easy. She said, write a book.
Just like that.
And I said, oh. And then she said, and then she had actually written a book called F-E-A-R, Feck Excuses Act Revolutionary. And I said, okay.
I'll write a book.
I'll write a book. So I wrote a book.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do I know about? Well, you know, I could talk about a lot of things, but what do I know about most is like, oh, well, here's my memoir. I could do that. That's easy.
Yeah.
So that was it. And then she kind of thought, you know, well, maybe there's things in my story, you know, whatever, that might actually encourage somebody else, you know, because we actually knew each other quite well. She said, I think you've got something to say, you know. So I said,
yeah.
All right, then we'll see. We'll write it. I'm sure people want to read it, they can. If they don't want to read it, that's fine too.
Yeah.
And I have got some very interesting feedback. Like, people have said it's like life-changing. It's like, oh,
yeah,
really?
Oh, wow, that's quite amazing, isn't it? I can remember my book about ADHD. I got an email from someone saying, your book has helped me see there's light at the end of the tunnel. Really? Just, and that was just our story and kind of stuff that we'd learned along the way. And I thought I was a bit like you. Let's write a book. That would be something fun to do, you know. The books can have such a powerful impact, can't they?
Absolutely. You know, and I mean, being a kind of a relatively silent child, I read a lot, and I went everywhere in my head. You know, it was like, oh my God, you had all these lives. You know, I wanted to go to boarding school because the famous five were in boarding school, and you know, I wanted to go to all these things in Timbuktu. You know, I mean. All of that, like your imagination, really. And then when I actually kind of grew up, I thought, oh my, I can actually do a lot of these things. You know, we talked about Heidi earlier on. You know, I went up, you know, climbed up, walked up the Alps, you know, like Heidi, like The Sound of Music. And, you know, I actually went to a lot of the places I had read about when I was a child. I went to these places. And I thought, oh my God, they're real places. So, Reading really, really opens your eyes. And if a character in a book can do it, and it's not like total science fiction, you think, well, maybe a person can do it as well.
Yeah, definitely. I started reading something at the weekend. It's just, I really love the whole sort of contemporary romance books. They're my escapism. The little on Penny Lane and all those books with those kind of things. And I started reading one yesterday that had somebody going off as a job as a writer in residence. And I thought, that's a job? Started Googling it and seeing what opportunities there are. I'm thinking, gosh, so yeah, it's amazing where books can take you.
Yeah, they're just ideas. They're ideas. Yeah. And, you know, people, I mean, there's, you know, 7 billion people in the world. We're full of ideas.
We are.
And someone somewhere will strike something, you know, because my idea won't be the same as somebody else's idea. But if I hear somebody else's idea, I think, oh, wow, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Wow. That's right. And then a whole other world opens up. It's like, oh my God, I never thought of that, right?
Yeah.
And now we have so much now, and so much online, and so much is there, that in a way, I was just thinking, you know, like for people, we were talking about meditation there with someone the other day, and they were saying, you know, close your eye meditation or keep your eyes open meditation.
Yeah.
And I don't read. I just sit in the garden and look at the trees. That's my meditation, you know, I keep my eyes open. But there was that sense of, you know, there are so many things now, you're trying to like keep all the thoughts away, you know, there's so much, people are kind of nearly overwhelmed by everything. Yeah. So there's this thing to try and clear your mind of something. And I'm thinking, well, actually, you don't really have to clear it. It's just bringing all the nice stuff.
Yeah.
So for me, sitting in the garden and looking at the trees and looking at the thing, that's all nice stuff. You know, I don't really want to have to close my eyes particularly and, you know, empty my mind. My mind isn't going to empty. You know, but I can bring in the nice things, and then that's then when I open, and even if I'm looking at something and meditating on a little flower or meditating on a daisy, or obviously I'm looking at my window at daisies, you know, like what's not great about that?
And we all have our own ways of doing things, don't we? It's finding what works for you to get you through life, I guess.
Yeah, and I think people writing about their own experiences and then somebody else reading them, you know, choosing to read that book, like it's you go into a bookshop, you choose a book, you choose what you want to read, and then in the choosing of that, then you can fill your mind with whatever is in that story, and then that give you, you know, something, impetus or encouragement or something to go and do something else, you know. Because
so how did you go about writing your book? I mean, did you just kind of sit down and start writing, or did you plan out what you wanted to include, or
I had a lot of help from people like you.
Okay.
Right? All right. No clue how to write a book. Absolutely no clue, right? I hadn't even, I mean, I had read a gazillion books. I knew they had, you know, covers, and I knew they had chapters, but it never occurred to me like that was part of the process.
Right.
So what I did was I actually entered a competition with, you know, it kind of in the same thing. I, you know, if something, you know, things, once you start to have an idea, things pop into your inbox. So it was a competition, and it was, you could apply, you know, if you win it, you got like mentorship, and you got somebody could help you write and publish and market and everything, your book. And I said, I'll apply for that.
Yeah.
So I applied for the competition. I didn't win, but I got, I think, second or third. So I got an opportunity to speak to somebody about the process. And then I worked with that person for a while. And that person was in Australia, so it was kind of a long way away. But even still, it didn't really matter. I did actually end up going to Australia to a writing retreat. To work through, you know, and meet other people who were doing this same kind of fun stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And like, that was really cool. So then I did that. And then I kind of had, you know, when I came back then, you know, here, I kind of thought, well, you know, I need to kind of process it a bit more. So I maybe talked to somebody else, and they kind of helped structure it a little bit differently. And then I talked to somebody else. And then I handed it over eventually to somebody and said, there's so much here, can you just sort that out for me, please? Put that in the order. Can you put that in the order that will make sense to a reader? Because as a writer, I'm completely stuck in just writing it, whereas for a reader, so I just handed it over, and then it got published. There you go.
That is something really important, I think, to let somebody else have a look at what you've done, because
100%
you kind of put it in the order that makes sense to you, but actually for a reader, that's not necessarily going to work, is it? And if, when you're reading something, you get to a point and you think, hang on a minute, well, how is, we were there and now we're here, and how is that? I don't understand what's happened here. And that really takes you out of the book, doesn't it? And it breaks focus on it, and it makes it less enjoyable to read. You need
to have it flow and
having someone else to see it and say, okay, well, I think we need to do it like this. This is the structure that we're going to get that flow.
And I think it's a little bit of a, not a misnomer, but when you talk about, you know, self-publishing and, you know, everybody authoring, it's like everybody has a story, absolutely. But if I look back at all the books that I read as a child, they all went through a process probably of being edited and refused and back with your manuscript and before you got a publisher, you know, like people had a huge amount of work to do to make the book such that a publisher would take it on, such that they would, you know, trust that their audience could buy it. Whereas now that seems to have kind of, it's like, oh, no, I could just do it myself. It's like, no, we can't.
No, you just still need that.
And it's unlikely to be successful. Because
no, that's right. Yeah, I mean, self-publishing is to do self-publishing properly, actually, yeah, it's not just self-publishing, is it? You do need to have a team.
You need to ask.
Readers and designers and other people around to support you in the bits that aren't your strengths. Yeah.
You need to ask for what's needed. You need to ask, well, where can I get it? Who can help me with that?
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, yes, it's my story and I can write, but that's not to say I can actually turn it into something that's going to be of value to a reader.
No, that's right. So you said, and I just published it. So how did you just publish it?
Well, the other person did. I handed it over to, I suppose it's hybrid, was it? It was hybrid publishing.
Okay, all right, yeah.
What she called it, yeah.
So somebody else took it on and did all the work. Do they take a cut of it, or was it an upfront a fee that you paid and then you get the
profit? I think I just paid a fee upfront. It was very, you know, clean and clear and, you know, there was an agreement and it was just very sort of straightforward. I thought, well, I could do that. That gives me a lot of... freedom again for myself, and it takes the pain away of anything of all of that. So again, and I suppose really what we never really took on, what I didn't and wasn't part of it, was actually all the marketing. So that's really where I was like, oh, do I have to do that now? It's like, okay.
Marketing is tricky, isn't it? But so what has happened since the book came out? I mean, you've already said that you've had some you know, really lovely feedback from it and reviews saying it's life changing. Yeah.
What's happened in terms of growth and development for me as an author, right? Because when you have a book, now you can say, I have a book, right? Mm-hmm. So I was, again, probably through the meeting with Jack Canfield, I actually got connected with the National Publicity Summit in the US. Mm-hmm. So I actually went on the National Publicity Summit in the US twice, which means I actually pitched my book and my idea to like 150 media people in the US.
Oh,
it was such fun, right? So it was just like, but that was like something I would never, ever, ever, ever consider. It's like, oh my God, but like, well, why not? You know, now who knows what's going to come out of that? You know, it's like, but for me, it was a huge challenge. I mean, it was in the middle of the night, you had to do it like 3 a.m.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
And it was all on video. So I had to kind of get all of my, you know, everything ready that you could be, you know, on camera and you could have all, and you had to get all of these, you know, it's like, it was such a whole other experience that I would never have done. So you know, being an author allows you to do all sorts of different things.
It does, yeah. Quite. That's the power of yes again, isn't it? I mean, because you were invited and you said yes, exactly. Who knows what will come of it, but it's been a whole new experience and a put your book out to the audience and
you know, I think we have to go back and edit it and do a second version or something, a bit like you going back to your with your second edition. Maybe I'll do it with a little bit more intentionality this time,
right?
The speed.
Exactly. I think my first book was very much, I'm just going to write this for me, really, and then the second time around I thought, okay, I know people like it now, so what can I do to make it even better for the reader? Me anymore, this is about what other people can get out of it.
That's exactly where I'm at the moment. It's like, it's almost a responsibility now to kind of maybe, you know, tweak it a little bit or take a little bit more, you know, go into some bits, whatever, and take out, you know, just to maybe tweak it a little bit. Go back and revise it, a revised edition.
So are you still working, are you still
No, I retired. Actually, when I came back from that trip in Bali, I retired.
Oh, okay. All right then.
I said, no, actually, I think I'll have more fun. I think I'll have more fun in the publications world, the world of words, as I say, as opposed to the world of drugs.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a good move, definitely. So you're now what, a full-time publisher and writer?
Basically, yeah. And then we only publish a very specific range. We just literally publish our own diaries.
Yeah, yeah. That's fantastic.
We publish the Get Up and Go diaries. So if you want to get up and go anywhere, you can get up and go diaries.
At this day's when I need a bit of get up and go, definitely. So what advice would you have for other people listening to this, who maybe someone who's never thought about writing a book before but has an interesting life story to tell?
I think everybody has probably thought about writing a book somewhere. There's a bit of denial there. If you said, I never thought about writing a book, you probably think you couldn't do it. probably think, oh, it probably wouldn't be interesting, or you think something, right? That's just your thinking. Yeah. It's not really anything to do with anything. So it's like, don't let your thinking stop you. And what I would say is, ask somebody else, do you think you have a story worth telling? And if somebody else says, oh, I think so, then go with that one.
Okay. And then say,
well, actually, what do you think I should do next? And they'll say, I don't know, get yourself a mentor. Get yourself somebody. There's people out there like you, Alice. There's people like you out there who will help people to do it. And all you want is that little bit of help and encouragement and guidance for something. And then anybody can put their, you know, anybody can put it into. And there's a million kinds of books.
Yeah.
Like what I mean, I gave myself the challenge this year of reading Ulysses.
Oh, wow, you are brave.
Like, oh my goodness. Did anybody anywhere ever think that a book like Ulysses would ever get like passed? You know, and it's like one of the great scripts of all time. They're like thinking, because it's just a stream of consciousness, basically. Yeah. You know, and it's massive. You can write anything about anything. You can actually whether anybody wants to read it or not, or they're going to read it in your lifetime, or they're going to read it in some other lifetime. You know, whenever. Like, so what? It's like, me, it's like it was important for me, I think, to kind of have the experience of myself in writing my own book, that I was kind of at least. If somebody was going to say anything about me after I'm dead, read my book. This is what I say about me. I don't hear what you say about me. This is what I say about me.
Right. Yeah. So it's very
what I say about me is what matters.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's
everybody else has opinions, but you know.
It's very much your legacy, isn't it? It's this is me. This is me told from my point of view.
Yeah. I was here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was here.
I think the great thing about books, I think even more so now than maybe 10 or 20 years ago, is that genres seem to be slipping away, don't they? I think it's very hard now, especially with
completely
memoir. It's very difficult to pigeonhole it as a certain genre. You know, even books that are almost entirely about somebody's life are actually full of so much learning or so much inspiration, or you know, there's something going on in there. So I think if people think, oh, my life on its own isn't interesting enough, well, that's probably a lie to start with.
Absolutely. That's the whole thing. If you've lived a life on this planet, it's interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, once you start thinking about other people you've met, places you've been, things you've learned along the way, experiences you've had, and you start pulling all that in, you know, you've got to create something that's unique, that's interesting.
It's unique. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that people will learn something from, whether it's something about you or something that they can take away and use for themselves.
Mm. And people get a bit caught in comparison, you know, or it's like, oh, if you compare it with something and you think, oh, it's different to that, or it's not as good as that, or it's worse than, you know. And I mean, comparison is a complete and utter pitfall. And unfortunately, you know, we learn, in school, when we're sitting beside people and we start comparing ourselves with, you know, they can do it better. Like the amount of people that could speak better than me, I promise you, was everybody. So, you know, that was, and then I just stopped because I couldn't compete with that. It seemed like I couldn't compete with that because I couldn't get my words out the way they could. So why bother?
But
that's not to say that, you know, whatever wasn't going on in between my two ears and in behind my two eyes wasn't going on all the time. I mean, I was listening and observing and that, I mean, like whatever, you know, so that probably colored a lot of my experience of the world, like what I saw.
Yeah.
What
I bet. In fact, actually, being kind of not on the sidelines, but being that observer and probably observing a lot more than anyone else, I would imagine gave you a much more rich experience than being in the middle of it. Because
whether it was rich or not, it was mine. You know, it was my experience. So from my perspective, that's kind of what I gleaned.
Yeah.
You know, which now allows me, when I'm putting the diaries together, I can really kind of, I think I can put in what really I think is kind of fairly like universal as opposed to specific, you know, to any one thing. It's like, well, actually, that's a really universal principle. Like that one says, after the final no comes the yes, and on the yes, the world depends. I mean, I didn't invent that, but it's quite a truism. And from my experience of life, it's like, well, actually, it is true if you could get it long enough.
I have to ask you, how did you get over the stammer? Because listening to you now, I don't think I would ever have, if you hadn't said that you'd had a stammer and that you were selectively mute at times because of the stammer, there's no way, you know, I would believe that now.
So, I know. That's most people's kind of bewilderment, you know. Yeah. But like for me, I hadn't realised the extent to which I was unwilling to try and speak in public. I just wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't. And that was it. And you couldn't make me, and you couldn't ask me, and you couldn't make me, and I wouldn't do it. So for myself, I just didn't do it. I refused. And then I never discovered what actually it would sound like if I did say it. So I was challenged at an event one time to actually speak. And I did. And it was like, oh, this isn't so bad.
Okay, God.
Like, okay, you know, it's like, so really, it was just really the refusal. It's like, I probably had lost my stammer a long time ago. And the only time it really manifested was when I was really, really, really nervous. And if I was nervous and if I was upset and, you know, like I could be at a meeting or something and I might have something to say and I would, you know, my brain would be screaming to say something. And as soon as I would think about saying it, like think about putting up my hand or whatever, it would be like suddenly like my heart was like a train coming out through my chest. Yeah. My tongue was stuck to the roof of my mouth. It was like, and I would just put my hand down. Doesn't matter. Somebody else would say it.
Yeah.
And then leave the meeting, whatever, or disappointed because nobody said it. And maybe I'd write afterwards, or I'd say it to one person strategically. What about that?
You know, and they'd say
it. Kind of a small thing. And then it might go around like circuitously. But I had no confidence to actually speak in any kind of open arena. You know, and then when I kind of, you know, like did it that one time and then I did it again, I thought, well, actually, if I didn't refuse to do it and just did it like I said I would do it, I thought, actually, it's not so bad. Here we go. So I have since been on. We actually even went on Dragon's Den with the diaries.
Did you? You were on telly.
You know, it's like, and I went on, I was on a television, and I was there on a television program there trying to explain how I didn't have a stammer. And people are looking at me thinking, she can't be real, you know. I said, no, it's true.
Oh, gosh. Did they invest?
No, they didn't, because we weren't digital at the time.
Ah, okay, yeah.
This was 10, 12 years ago.
Right, okay.
It was kind of back into, I think it was 2010 or 2011 that we went on to. It was quite early on. And I think, you know, had we been digital at the time, I think, I think they would have invested, no bother. They can invest now.
So you have digital diaries now then?
Yes. We've digital versions of the diary, but it's like, it's funny. People still want the read. They want the diary. They want to turn the pages. They want to fill it in. I mean, the amount of people that I've said who just swear by it, they're waiting for them to come out. Waiting for the next one.
I have my paper journal. I write in my paper journal every day. It has my tasks in. I went back to paper actually after doing things digitally because it just worked for me.
There is something... And there's something very grounding as well about actually writing something down. I think that's why journaling and writing is now becoming so important. Speaking is not really doing it because there's so much noise out there. You can't get heard in the speaking arena, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and then people are kind of, you know, tweeting or Twittering or whatever it is. But actually writing and journaling and actually getting your thoughts literally onto paper in a way that's, you know, nobody else is going to read them. Nobody's really going to hear it unless you want them to. But there is that sense of, you know, a whole kind of your structure. It's coming from your brain, which is like a morass of gosh knows what, almost like down the thing into your arm, into your hand, and then out on the pen. And you can't write that fast. I can speak fast. I can also write fast. But most people, it is a kind of a thing where you do have to slow down.
Oh gosh, yes, definitely.
And get it onto paper and then read it and then think, gosh, you know, and read what you've written. And that's interesting. Is that in my head? And it's great if it's science fiction or a novel. Sure, put it out there and let other people read it and enjoy it.
Yeah, no, that's right. But it does bring out some really interesting things.
Yeah, and if it's something that's better out than in, as I say, you know, if something's better out than in as well, you know, a lot of people, they don't, a lot of things, and they ruminate a lot and just go round and round and round in your head. And that doesn't help either.
No.
So get that out, look at it and read it. And then think, would I let somebody else read that? You know, and if they did, what would they think? And can we talk about that, you know, and get that out and get that can just dissipate.
It's kind of, you know, a problem shared is a problem halved. Well, you're
always
not sharing it with anyone, but you're sharing it with the paper, and by getting, like you say, getting it out of your head and onto paper,
it's very important.
Yeah, kind of make
very important for your own clarity.
Takes the burden off you a little bit, and yeah, journaling's great, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah. So I thoroughly recommend that.
You mentioned earlier that you're doing a second edition of the Courage to Shine.
Well, I'm thinking of it.
Okay. Do you think you'll be doing any more books? I mean, obviously the diaries, I guess, will carry on.
Well, actually, I did have another outline of a book. Yeah, I did. It was just based, I kind of thought it was something to do with, you know, there's this quest for the truth. You know, people are looking for the truth, looking for evidence, the truth, where's the truth, where's the truth?
Yeah.
And I suppose I was in a conversation recently saying, well, there's only a truth for me. You know, the truth for me is not necessarily true for you. And looking for like the truth out there, like it exists out there, like it's in the Bible or the Quran or the trees or something. It's like there's really only the truth for you kind of in your own discovery of something. Mm. And you discover it's true for you. It's like, oh,
yeah.
And then you can kind of hold on to that. And then there's the world of kind of, you know, just, I suppose, just it just in that is kind of thinking, well, what could I write about that for me? What's that? So anyway, that was just something I was toying with.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
A little bit my memoir, because the truth for me, whether anybody agrees with it or not, is, well, that's actually how I see the world. You know, you might think it's bizarre, but that's how I see it. That's how I've discovered it is. From where I'm sitting behind my eyes and my ears.
No, and the truth is, you're right, the truth is different for everyone, and how you find it, what it is, what it looks like.
Yeah, exactly. And no, they're truth, talking, yeah, people talk a lot about, you know, who do you trust now?
Mm.
You know, who do you trust? Like, you know, do you trust the government? Do you trust your teachers? Do you trust your authority? Do you trust the police? Do you trust, you know, like where is that?
Yeah.
And then looking for evidence, you know, and court cases, and it's like, gosh, you know, and then again, there's a link in there.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you can really trust yourself to have your own truth in a way. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be looking outside for this or this or this. What about them? 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 And it's like, you go mental. It's like, no, what about me?
Start here. Start with it.
Start here, over here. Let's make it simple. Keep it simple.
Yeah. Keep it simple. That sounds like a really good idea. Eileen, I feel like we could probably talk for the rest of the day, but for reasons of editing, I think we need to bring it to a close now. Where can people find out more about you and your book and the diaries?
Well, I'm actually, now that I have an author, I have a website, eileenforrestal.com.
Okay, brilliant.
So there's that. And there's actually a free excerpt of one of my chapters on that.
Fantastic.
And then the diaries is getupandgodiary.com. So my diaries are in Get Up and Go Diary, and my book is in the eileenforrestal.com.
And presumably people can get your book on Amazon.
It's on Amazon, yeah. That's only available on
Amazon. Diaries as well? Can you get the diaries?
No, the diaries are on our own website.
We just on the website.
Yeah, okay, they're not on Amazon. Well, they are on Amazon in the US, but they're not on Amazon.
Okay, all right. Here, so it has been absolutely fantastic talking to you today.
Yeah, it's been lovely. Thank you, Alison.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Eileen for being my guest on the podcast today. Eileen's journals are available exclusively from her publishing website, www.getupandgodiary.com, and you can find out more about Eileen on her author website, www.eileenforrestal.com. Her book The Courage to Shine is also available from Amazon. If you'd like to know more about me and how I work with authors, come along to my website, www.theprooffairy.com. You'll also find all the episodes of this podcast there, along with information on how you could be a guest on the show. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please subscribe, share it, rate it, tell your friends about it, and leave a review. This has been a Proof Fairy production, and I'll be back next time with another inspiring interview with another amazing author. Bye for now.